ever beyond. On Wolf Spirit Radio, everbeyondradio.com, Tiernas Owl from Ireland, ScottishSovereignsOnTheLand.ning.com. Be prepared to leave your belief systems behind as we go beyond teachers, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond. Good afternoon, good evening, good morning. Welcome to Ever Beyond. Welcome to Wolf Spirit Radio and also to Tiernas Owl. As I said, Scottish Sovereigns, or it's called People for People now, I think. It's something like that. Anyway, we are tonight all broadcasting from Ever Beyond Radio Studios here in the north of Scotland. And I'd just like to welcome my guest tonight. We met through the Connecting Consciousness group, so connecting a consciousness with Shailene Tetreau. Did I say that right?
You did. You said it with a lovely accent, so I appreciate it.
It's the accent, you know, I can get away with stuff, but...
exactly.
So, you know, because with your... You know, I had this fantasy, all right? So I have to say, I had this fantasy. My dad's French-Canadian, right? And so he had this French-Canadian accent, you know, he speak like... So I was fully expecting to speak like this all night. So,
I have an old-school Boston accent.
Boston!
Yeah, Boston. Which over the years I've kind of I've tamed down a little bit after going to school. So, but it comes out once in a while.
It comes out all right. It's very listenable. So, you contacted me and you wanted to. There's things that you've been studying over the years that as you connect in your life. You realize, this is an essential part to the great puzzle that we're all holding and we're all trying to fix. And, you know, one of the main things is like where the edges of the puzzle, once you get the edges of the puzzle, you know, where everything fits. Mm-hmm. And I think that the medical aspect of things and what medicine really is one of the great mysteries that is held from people as a... as a secret that only specially trained people are able to understand how healing works, and only secret information can give you the authority to heal someone. I think to me that's a complete twaddle and poppycock.
I agree. Except so, I wouldn't say twaddle, I would say something else.
No, of course not. I was just using a charming English turn of phrase there for you. Just to be archetypal, just for a moment, you know. And then, where do you come in? I mean, there you are. You're in Massachusetts, right? You're in Boston.
Yes.
What are you doing looking at Eastern medicine? And, you know, there must have been something that kind of kicked you out of Western medicine.
You
know, everybody's got their story. Let's go into that. I always like to talk about what was the point that turned you? What was the awakening point, the one that you said, in my case, it was like, sod this for a game of soldiers. You know, there was a moment that I said, screw this. That was it. That was the, I decided not to work for the man anymore.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's a good point. I work for myself, or I actually try to work in service to my clients and patients as much as I can. My first sort of falling in love with what is known as Ayurvedic medicine, which is a traditional science from India and other places, began through my family. I have two sisters, and my twin sister, actually, she went to school for massage therapy, and she would practice on me. And I thought that it was wonderful. It was really my first experience with any kind of alternative therapy. And she then took another course with a teacher in Rhode Island, which is just south of Massachusetts, who was teaching a specific body therapy in Ayurvedic medicine. And I was so inspired by the work that she was doing that I decided to also take a course with the same teacher. And we both just fell in love with how complete Ayurveda is. It's Ayurveda literally translates as the science of life or life knowledge. It's also it incorporates the use and the healing of all of the senses, and it just felt right in my heart to study this and to incorporate it into my work. It really was just something that came up as an inspiration, as opposed to didn't come from having any kind of negative experience with medicine, with allopathic medicine per se. That came later. Some of my experiences with allopathic medicine on the not so positive side came later, basically hearing the experiences of my clients and patients, which I used as inspiration to continue my practice. That's sort of in a nutshell.
Okay, so, and so when you found you found the other way, did you get sick from having to deal with Western medicine? Was there something that actually, because in my case, I had a big bike crash, and all mangled, and then I kind of reconstructed myself and discovered these things on the way that you could do things for yourself, you know, or there are other ways of being helped, you know. Like, I went to a chiropractor who put my etheric body back where it should be because, you know, it had hit the car at 60 miles an hour and, like, was several feet in front of my body still, you know. It's like, break. It doesn't have the same brakes as we do. And so, you know, I might be a year in hospital, but my body is still out. And nobody would have caught that. You know, it's like what we don't know that makes us ill. I was referring to that again in the last show, as, you know, nobody knew about the archonic grid, and now we're all being able to understand it because we're coming out of it. And also, not everybody knew about the whole yeast grid, which I'm currently exposing. And you know, I was talking about that in the last show again with Nancy and Walt about it's a way for some force to mind control us, and to literally move us like zombies. You know, we're drawn towards the beer. Homer Simpson is an embodiment of the nun.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I think that I didn't have any kind of major accident that left me debilitated. And I also just wanted to say on a side note, it sounded like you received help from this chiropractor, which is great. But, you know, essentially, we all truly do our own healing. We just get sort of nudges from other people. And I think that's part of why we're here. We're here to sort of nudge each other and maybe offer something that may help the person remember that they can heal themselves. But I actually have been fairly sensitive to food. And it definitely became more apparent, I would say, in my mid to late 20s, just eating all different types of food and having different digestive reactions that weren't so great. And so just naturally seeking different ways of being. The first experience I had of thinking about food in a different way was one of my first waitressing jobs, actually in Boston, at a small macrobiotic restaurant. And that was a wonderful beginning because it made me realize that a person can actually heal simply by their mindfulness in what they eat. And, you know, macrobiotic diet may not be the best choice for everyone, but it just opened me up to the idea like, oh, okay, you can start simply with what you encounter on a daily basis, and that would be obviously food. So that was sort of my beginnings with healing myself, is just to become aware of how much we can bring ourselves back into balance through what we eat. And I'm right there with you with the idea of the, do you call it the nung?
Yeah.
Right there with you with the idea of a kind of overgrowth or imbalance with the different yeasts and bacteria in our body. I mean, it's amazing how much bacteria we have living in our body, on our skin. It's more than our cells. I think there's more bacteria in our body than there are cells, which is pretty profound.
Yeah, I know. And here's the thing, you know, it's like, you might have been listening, but I was likening, if we were the size of a planet, if we were a planet, and there were creatures living on our skin, we would call them bacteria, wouldn't we?
Absolutely.
But Gaia...
There are creatures living on our skin.
Yeah.
There are bacteria.
Exactly. But Gaia calls them people.
That's a good point, yeah.
And so we are a community of conscious individuals, and it's like a fractal. And if we can somehow align with the natural way of order, which is, you know, a natural order is that my hand is in service to the rest of my body, but obviously my body is going to take care of my hands.
Yes.
And right. there's a whole, it's all about a social interaction that keeps everybody not abused. And some people do abuse their bodies. And, you know, people talk about abusing your body. As if it's a thing.
Well, yes, you know. As opposed to, our connection.
Yeah, and as opposed to a community.
Right. And it's interesting to think about how our bodies are, as you were saying, we're a reflection of, let's say, Earth. What are we doing to our bodies right now, and how is that sort of a mirror of what's happening on the Earth in a larger scale, both the positive and the negative?
Completely. And as I always say, it ain't true if it ain't part of a holographic... holographic omniverse, a fractal omniverse. Yes, it's hard to say because it's not a very good aphorism. It's like the worst aphorism in the world, but it's actually it works for me. You know, like what I mean is that if you can see something in nature somewhere else, and it's just a matter of scaling it up or down to make it match, and then you can see the order of things.
Yes, exactly.
So. And really, medicine is about setting things in order. You know, I'm currently talking a lot about electricity because I deal with, I'm making a household system, so I'm thinking electricity. And
yes.
The alchemy, you know, in the old days, alchemy is about like using the ideas of chemistry to speak about, metaphysical terms.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So there must be some kind of equivalent in terms of physics, you know, like alchemy, something that does physics. Maybe that's metaphysics. Huh? Anyway, I'll just, anyway, not very original, JP. Anyway, look, I'll just continue my conversation with me somewhere else, let's keep talking. See, we're getting to the idea and this is this subject has come up on my show a lot. It's part of my thing. Is medicine? Is music? Is magic? Is magnificent?
Medicine is everything. Yes. Anything can be used as medicine. Even certain poisons. Something that's considered poison to one person could be medicine for another person if it's used in the proper way with the proper intention. This is something that's taught in Ayurveda. And one of my teachers, Maya Tiwari, she speaks a lot about our inner medicine. you know, which everyone possesses, and it's simply a matter of remembering. So we all forget, you know, we all forget that our true nature is connecting to spirit, or, you know, no different than the divine source. And when we forget, that's when we become ill. So it's a matter of trying to remember. You know, it's simple in some ways. And with practice, I think that you can learn to trust your inner medicine more, and, you know, seek out help from other people when you need it, whether that be someone who does sound healing or someone who works with food. You know, there's so many different ways. And in Ayurveda, all of the senses are addressed, you know, so like aromatherapy for the sense of smell, and color therapy for the sense of sight, tons of body therapies for the sense of touch. It's a really wonderful science that can help people reignite their own inner wisdom.
Lovely. So Pip's decided that he's interested in the gravy bones in my pocket now. So
that's great. That's great. He's woken up from his slumber then.
Yeah, he's been laying here all afternoon.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, so having like an animal companion, that can certainly be medicinal, you know, until they become a pain in the butt.
Yeah, it doesn't last long before they get demanding again. There you go. Go lie down now. Go lie down. Good boy.
Good boy.
Yes, you're a good boy. He's a good boy. You know the question, who's a good boy? He's a good boy. So the idea of merging all of life as medicine, is that what the Ayurvedic way is? Is like seeing all of life as medicine? Is that a sort of way of looking at it?
That could be one way for sure. Like, for example, herbal medicine is used as one of the ways to reignite someone's memory and inner wisdom. And in some of the herbal remedies, actually, it's not even herbal. They're called basmas. They're not legal in the U.S. But some of those a basma is actually using heavy metals such as mercury in the correct way. And it's almost like an alchemical process. The number of steps that someone has to go through to create these medicines is really unreal. And it includes like how many hours you leave this concoction out in the sun, or buried in clay in the earth. It's really magical. Not allowed in the U.S. But, you know, mercury obviously is highly poisonous to people, but if it's used in the correct way, it can heal a person. I'm trying to think of another example, but there's just so many different therapies. And also you can start very simply, in terms of a daily practice. They're called dinacharyas, so daily habits that you can bring into your life as an individual that will help to bring your body back into balance. And some things are very simple, which is great. I really appreciate the simplicity of some of these practices. And it's all about being aware of your habits, because everyone has them. Some of them could be called addictions, but some of them are habits when you do something without thinking about why you're doing it, and altering them and changing them. Even brushing your teeth, I mean, that's considered a habit. That's something most people do without thinking about anymore because they've done it for so long. But there's many practices that a person can do. And when, you know, when I'm working with my clients and patients, and also when I began these practices myself, there's a little, you know, there's some growing pains that go with them, because you kind of have to think more for a while. You know, you're not just kind of going through the world on autopilot. You have to think, oh, this is when I'm supposed to do this practice. And, you know, it can make you a little ornery sometimes, because you're just having to make changes, and that can be difficult. But well worth it, you know.
Well, you know, I've been experiencing that exact thing, you know, over the last 3 years, because, you know, I just got really sick one day, literally, and actually it was the it was exactly two visits of Pipagone that this happened. And it was a transformative event, because it was like my body, it was like someone pressed the reset button on my body.
Yeah.
And said, okay, no more of this crap.
You're going to purge.
You're going to purge. Yeah, it's like, you know, if a boat comes into the dock and it's got a kind of these solenoid operated valves that then dump all the water that's kind of filled in the baluster.
Yeah. Mental process.
Yeah, so is there a word for that stage?
Yeah, purging.
Purging, all right. No, nothing more cool
or
than that.
Or cleansing, yeah.
There's no Samarana or something. It's like Ayurvedic words.
Oh, I know.
And stuff, yeah.
You know, well, Virechana would be the Ayurvedic name.
What
yes.
A great word, Virechana. That's exactly...
No, with a V, as in Venus. Virechana.
Virechana. Yeah, I sometimes Virech. Yeah, that's the...
Yes, exactly.
I was Vireching, yeah. I was very retching.
Well, you know, that's interesting. That's happened to me twice as well. Mm-hmm. 2 years in a row, both in the springtime, almost probably to the day, it was very strange. I ate some food. It was the same place. And then that night, Virechana, for sure. I mean, you can actually do these practices intentionally, and they're meant to be intentional, but sometimes greater wisdom takes over, and it's like, well, no, you're actually going to do a Virechana now, whether or not you think you're ready. And at first I was concerned, but then it didn't last very long. It sounded like for your experience as well, it was intense but shorter duration. Is that true? Like,
yeah,
less than
I mean,
couple days?
Well, once you start getting used to it, you realize this is what the game is.
Yeah.
And you realize, well, actually, I feel a lot better than I do before than I do, you know, I feel a lot better afterwards when I do it, after I've done it. So I realize that I start to welcome it. I welcome it too. All right, here's the biscuit. Here's the biscuit.
Break.
Go lie down. Okay, go lie down. Don't come back. That's what he does. Oh, that's the game, is it? All right, I go down here and come back.
Well, you're going to feed him so many treats that eventually he'll have his own Virechana.
Yeah, that's
he'll
right.
Bring himself back into balance.
That's right. Usually on the kitchen carpet. It's on the hallway carpet that he does the Virechana, yes.
Yeah, the hardest place to clean it up.
Yeah. On the carpet, but luckily it's a discarded, you know, it's a rubbish carpet so that people can make a mess. Anyway, long story. That's domestic. So there's this purging stage. Let's talk about, because a lot of people talk about the healing crisis.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I imagine that in an ancient system like this, we'll have it all mapped out.
Yeah.
In the same way that we now have an understanding that there are five stages to grief, and there's the negotiation, all that stuff. There's a process to the healing crisis, and that if you're feeling such and such, it's okay because this is what's going on. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Yeah. Sure. I'll probably speak about. There is a very defined process, and it's called Pancha Karma. Pancha means five, and Karma means action. So there are five actions, five therapeutic actions that are used in Ayurveda to help cleanse a person. And then also after Panchakarma, equally important, there's a period of time that speaks about rejuvenation. And so during these five cleansing steps, there's actually more because you have to prepare before Panchakarma. A healing crisis could absolutely occur. Like, for instance, say a person has spent many years struggling with gallbladder issues. I'm trying to keep my language more English as opposed to Ayurvedic, so that more people can follow along. But so let's just say someone has a lifelong or a couple of years issues with their gallbladder and their liver, and so they begin this Panchakarma process. They may start to experience worsening issues with their skin, like, say, heavy rashes, a lot of heat coming out through their skin, itchiness, they may experience intense anger, because in Ayurveda there's an understanding that we hold the emotion of anger in our liver. So that may start rearing its ugly head. And we want that to come out, even though it's intense. You know, even though it may feel like you're kind of going downhill as opposed to uphill, we want to help the patient to metabolize that and process that. But you're under guidance, you know, when you're having, if you're having what is called a healing crisis, or what is understood as a healing crisis, you'll have people around you to be like, no, it's okay. Don't worry. Just go for it. Go through it and we'll help you out. And, I know for me personally, I do a cleanse every season, not the full Panchakarma, but a cleanse. And as soon as I start a very specific part of this cleanse, which is when you begin to eat a specific food and it's a mono diet of the same food for a length of time, I start raging. I get very angry because I really love food, and I start, you know, emoting a lot. And it happens every time. It's just that anger starts coming out. And when it first happened, you know, I was a little bit less experienced with it. And wondering, just questioning, like, why am I so angry? But now I know. I'm like, oh, here comes the rage again. You know, I'm just going to start raging at everything and everyone. And everyone should just keep their distance for now. But it's because I was attached to certain foods. And, you know, we could say it was the Nong rearing their ugly heads demanding certain things.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, Panchakarma, you're working with a team of people. You're working with an Ayurvedic physician or with a Panchakarma specialist, as well as, you know, body therapists. And so it's a good process to go through. Oh, it's my little daughter. Sorry, I don't know if you can hear her crying.
If you'd like, we can take breaks if you like. Sort of nice long break, so you can talk. Because I have a little one here. I have a little 3-year old here. Oh, little 3-year old furry thing.
Yeah, I was going to say, is that the dog?
Yeah, that's the dog. Yeah. My son is 19 years old and away at university. Thank God. Anyway, let's put a tune on and we'll reconvene in a couple of minutes. Thank you very much. Woof. Woof. What's this? Radio edit. You're not alone by Olive Engelstad. There we go. So, Chilin, you're back with us.
Yes.
Lovely. So, you got everything sorted out, yeah?
Oh, yeah. She was fine. She was just heading up for a bath with her dad. So she saw me and called out. Yeah. Hey. kind of like your pup.
Yeah. Okay, now, just a minute. Let me just speak to the dog. Now, if you can not bark, you get one of these, okay? Go and lie down. Go lie down. No, don't go lie down. And stay there. So I've got a little pile of tidbits, a little pile of little pieces of meat.
You have to create a little automatic feeder.
Yeah, I just sling one over my shoulder every 10 minutes.
Well, there you go. There you go. That works.
Yeah, it's a. You just stay there. Yeah, not near a shine, but the pit. Yeah, good boy. Yeah, you're a good boy. You know who the good boy is. Yeah, it's you. Yeah. Anyway. So, our subject was that Ayurveda has mapped out the process of the healing crisis and all that. So we got a couple of stages. Go away. We got a couple of stages. Actually, one of the things that he was barking about is that I had some fries in the oven. And he was saying, you got some food cooking there. Can I help you by telling you that you're going to...
By eating some, absolutely.
Of course, I'd take any reward as compensation for my wonderful alertness and guard dogginess.
Exactly. He's like, I deserve a fry.
That's right. You'll get one, but wait till they cool down. You'll burn yourself. Yes, you'll burn yourself. Go and lie down. Go and lie down. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, so, well... You know, I was speaking about Panchakarma, which are five. They're five distinct steps, but actually, before Panchakarma is a process of preparation where you prepare the body internally by internal oleation, which means that you ingest a specific type of oil for a number of days, and you also ingest this mono diet, meaning this one type of food for a number of days. And that begins to loosen up a substance that is called AMA, A-M-A, which are basically improperly digested food and thoughts that kind of get lodged in the body over time. So you kind of go in and you do this process of internal oleation, and that AMA, that's the sticky, gooey substance, which is probably the nung. This is probably another name for nung, is AMA.
Yep.
And this oiliness will go in, it can seep through all your tissues, go deep into the joints, and begin to soften the sticky substance that just wants to adhere to the inside of your body and mind. And so all of that AMA begins to soften, and it gets circulating into your bloodstream. So you can imagine that you're not going to feel so great for a little while. You also start to receive body therapies that help move your blood and move the AMA out of the tissues, where eventually, after it's circulating in your body for a while, gets deposited into your large intestine. So that way you can excrete it out of the body. There's also a process where you called svedana, where it's basically sweating. So you're sweating some of this AMA out of your body, opening the pores. So there, you know, there's like a kind of pre-panchakarma phase, and then there's the panchakarma, which is the deep cleansing and elimination. And then, like I said, there's a rejuvenation phase, because you have this body that has just been cleansed of all this AMA, all this nung, and then, you know, it's like this clean canvas. So you're going to paint it with more nung? I don't think so. You know, you want to rejuvenate the body with and bring it back to its original state slowly and gently, which is really important. So that's kind of that in a nutshell. I mean, I can talk about the five different processes if you'd like, if you want me to get that detailed.
All right, that's interesting. Yeah. I like the way that the process that's called sweat armor is where you sweat the armor.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, there's some, you know, Sanskrit so comes through our language. It's already there. You know, we don't have to translate. It's already there.
Well, Sanskrit is like an original language, and I think every letter in Sanskrit, it has so much meaning behind it, the way you draw it, the way you speak it. It's supposed to be true to form, you know, like the sound Om, which I know has a lot of things attached to it because of the whole yoga movement that's happening now. But Om is the primordial sound, you know, that's the original sound of creation. So, you know, the way words are used and described, yeah, they're completely in tune with what they mean. Absolutely. But yeah, did you want me to speak about the panchakarma steps?
Please. How does karma punch you? The words, sure. It just makes itself up, you know, isn't it? Oh, well, it is. Yeah, pretty good. Anyway, so how do you get punched by karma?
Well, it's interesting. I know a lot of people have different associations with the word karma, and karma simply means action. So if you think of it that way, it's easier to kind of wrap your head around. So there is, well, we spoke about virechana, but before that, so virechana cleanses basically from the middle of your body, your small intestine area, down. So it eliminates whatever's hanging out there down and out the body. But before that, so, you know, let's say what is above your belly button, one of your major organs there, besides the heart and lungs, of course, is your stomach. And so your stomach can hold excess AMA, excess a thing called kapha. And so there's a process called vamana, which is therapeutic vomiting, which sounds kind of intense, but
yeah, that sounds like the most sought after therapy on the card. Yeah, I think I'll have some of that. Yeah,
yeah, I know. Well, actually, not every patient will be asked to do that. It really depends on what's going on for the person. So not every person, that therapy is not necessary for every person. But that is one of the processes, is vamana. And again, very appropriate word, vamana. And then the second one is virechana. So that is eliminating, basically helping the organs eliminate from, I would say, you know, below the stomach and down. So liver, small intestine, large intestine, pancreas, that kind of thing. Helps all those organs get what they need, you know, get their cleansing. Gosh, let's see. So one, two, so that's two. There's Basti, and Basti is working strictly with the colon. So that's cleansing the colon. And in our culture, it's probably the same in the UK, probably the same in Scotland. Some people are a little bit timid to do that part, but it's very important because so much ama is lodged in our colon. And this is a really effective way to get rid of ama. There is another process called Rakta Moksha. So moksha means liberation. And Rakta is, I would say, most closely resembling blood in our, you know, for translation, blood would be the closest word. So Rakta Moksha is liberation of blood. Which is bloodletting, which again sounds really intense.
Pass the leech, will you?
Yeah, well, so leeches were used in Rakta Moksha. The way that it can be done safely in the U.S., you can donate blood. But then you also have to think about the karma of donating sludgy blood, you know, blood that you're meaning to cleanse. So you have to sort of kind of debate with yourself about that. If that's okay for you or not. So that was four, yes? One, two, three, four. There's one that I'm forgetting. Oh, I'm forgetting one on the radio. That's not good. So those are the four. Do you have any thoughts about those four? And I can drum up the last one here.
No, I'm sure it'll come. So they're basically ways of relieving the internal pressures in the different organ systems, aren't they? Vomiting yeah. releases pressure in the intestine, in the high intestine. Then there's the low intestine pressure, and then you know the bloodletting is the pressure inside the you know the blood system. And
yeah, that's an interesting way of looking at it. There's different movements that are recognized in Ayurveda, different movements of how the body is. one movement is actually the movement of taking in the world into the body. So it's like taking the outer world through your senses, you take them into the body. So that's one movement. And then there's another movement where you circulate you're through the body, you know, nutrients and sensory impressions. So there's like a circulation type of movement. Again, we had already talked about elimination. So there's a movement of elimination. There's also a movement of absorption. So there's, yeah, it's a way of getting those movements back to balance. So when you say pressure, that makes me think of correcting the movements within a body. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, if we were a hydraulic, you know, hydraulic system like you get on a lorry or you know a truck or a bulldozer or something like that, yeah, mm-hmm. You know, too much pressure, you know, it means there's a valve blocked, you know.
Right.
Then
yeah.
You'd find where the valve was blocked, and we have the same kind of hydraulic systems and all of that kind of stuff going on.
Yes.
That is affected by our emotional traumas and indeed our physical scars from traumas.
Absolutely. They're called shrotas, these channels in they're called shrotas. They're channels in the body, and some of them are physical and some of them are subtle. The mano baha shrota, that's the channel of the mind. So there's a really profound recognition of the subtle body as well as the physical body in Ayurveda, which I really love, and that really makes sense to me. There's an understanding that our body is not simply physical. It extends in different sheaths, different layers out from the body, to infinity, so that you connect to God source, or divine, or whatever you want to call that.
Would that correspond with what people call their dimensions?
I wonder. I don't know. There's, five koshas? Oh, all my Ayurvedic friends are they're probably like saying, no,
there's face palming.
So for the sake of people who don't know,
there's five. There's five at first. There's at least five. And in terms of the everyday problems that people have. Now, when I do psychic readings and stuff like that dimensional, I tend to go up to what people call the fifth dimension, which is what the Buddhist tradition calls the mental plane.
Okay, right. So there's the
Buddhi
plane. The
Buddhi. So it's the Atmas and the Buddhis and all that stuff.
Yes, very similar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I mean, and I think it's they're from similar traditions. Tradition. Yeah. Word. Anyway. Tradition.
Well,
Go ahead.
That's the thing, and I'm very interested in exploring that the idea of dimension with the koshas. I haven't thought about it in that way. The outermost kosha is the Ananda kosha, so the sheath of bliss, and that's the one that attaches, that's connected to everything and to God's source. But the sheath that's the most dense is our food sheath. It's our physical body. We take in food, and then it goes out from there. So it's the sheath of the mind, and then there's the sheath that deals with the ability to astral travel. So I'm sure there's correlations. It would be really interesting to think about that a little bit more. So there are therapies that will work with all of those sheaths. Like there's a therapy called Shirodhara. It's oleation of the head, specifically the Ajna chakra, which is the spot that is just above and in between your eyebrows. And you drip oil from a distance away. You have the patient lying on the table, and this oil, this warm oil, it's not Chinese water torture. That's what everyone says. That sounds like Chinese water torture.
I was just going to say, it sounds like Chinese water, but I imagine that there's because oil is a very interesting thing when it comes to skin, because skin and oil mix better than skin and water, do they not? Skin is a form of fat. Well, skin contains fat that it will allow oil straight through, but won't let water through. Is that right?
Yes. That's a good way of looking at it for sure. And these oils that are used are herbalized, so they're infused with specific herbs that have specific healing properties. And oil, the word for oiliness is shneha. I keep throwing out these words, but I can't help it. But shneha also means love. So love is oily. That's something that one of my teachers, Dr. Lod, used to say, or he still says. So you're using this herbalized oil, and you're dropping it onto the client's head from a vessel, a copper vessel. Copper is used a lot, as are other metals in Ayurveda.
I love copper.
Oh, I do too. Yeah, we need to talk about copper. Anyway, so
let's talk about copper later, huh? When the show's over. No, go.
While all the listeners are falling asleep as we talk about copper. But so the oil is dropped from a distance away. I usually do about 6 inches, so that there's this idea that it's passing through the koshas of the body before it hits the physical body, and it's treating the koshas as well as the physical body. And this continuous stream of oil is running over this third eye, this Ajna chakra point, and cleansing or giving support, calming the nervous system. It's going in. Oh, yes.
So because you're doing it from a height, that was a clue to me. It's like you're dropping oil from a height. Now, I know oil penetrates skin, so it's going to have a momentum, and it's going to continue all the way down into the pineal gland, isn't it?
Absolutely.
I thought I had this nailed, yes.
You did. You did. Yeah, there are different portals, marma points. They're called marma, which means doorway. So there's these different points on the body. And I work a lot with this with my clients. The practitioner can touch these points on the person depending on what's going on for them. And so with the oil, you're working with a few points specifically. And actually with yoga, I know yoga has, yoga is widely misunderstood, but it really just means union with the divine. And sometimes that will be by doing flexible postures, and sometimes it'll be something else. But when you do the asana type of yoga, the yoga where you're moving and using your body, specific poses actually press on different marma points in your body. So that's not often known by a lot of people that practice, and I wish that was something that was out there a bit more. But these marma points, they're portals, you know, they're really, we have them, every person has them. And you can learn to work with them in different ways.
So, yes, it's coming up to the hour. So when you say these marma points are portals, you mean a portal like an ear or a mouth or a nose or something like that? Are you talking like that? Is that what you mean?
No, it's a bit different than that. So one of the marmas, like I said, is just above the eyebrows and between, you know, that kind of point on your forehead.
Yes. Well, people call that the third eye or the brow center.
Exactly. So that is a portal. So if you work with that, you can stimulate from what you had said about the pineal gland, you can work with that to heighten your inner vision or your more subtle vision. And also your creativity and things like that. And then, so another portal might be the web of your finger. Yeah, between your thumb and your first finger. There's a point there that you can squeeze. And that will help relieve, one thing it can do is help relieve migraine headaches, for example. But, so there are these different healing attributes that are given to each set of marma points on the body. And again, the question comes up for me is, okay, so they're considered portals. Can they be used, you know, to travel, to astral travel, to connect with really specific dimensions? That I'm not completely sure of, but I'm sure that, you know, intuitively I'm sure that there's more to it than just healing the physical body.
So, when we're talking about these portals, do they connect with what we therefore call chakras?
Some of them correlate with chakras, and there's more than the seven chakras.
Well,
it's just the ones we're more familiar with. Yeah, there's chakras in the center of our hands and our feet, for example.
Yep.
They're part of, the chakras are part of the marma points. Part of the nadi system. So marmas are along nadis, which are channels in the body or around the body. The chakras are just simply a part of that system. So, but the chakras, you know, correlate to both the physical and the subtle, which I really love. So third eye, Ajna chakra, is also related to the pineal gland, which is great. It's also related to inner vision. It's also related to communication in terms of higher communication like telepathy and that kind of thing. And then I'm trying to think of another one off the top of my head. They're usually related to
what about glands. The one at the top of your head?
The crown chakra?
Yeah.
That one's related to source. That's like when that chakra opens up, you know, it's like, that's all about samadhi or enlightenment.
And that does, so now in the tradition,
that one is related to like astral travel,
right? And is that where like the silver thread gets attached? Is that
silver thread? I guess so. Yeah, I haven't heard that specifically in my studies in Ayurveda, but I have heard of the silver thread.
Yeah, because that's a little more
crown chakra. Yeah, what's interesting is that you know the chakras are being acknowledged in different modalities and different cultures, which is really fascinating, that there's an understanding that's so widespread. So it's like, oh, yeah, of course they exist. So many people have an understanding of them and just give these things slightly different names. which I think is fascinating.
Yeah, it's the naming thing, you see, because we're all, you know, everybody's got a different language. And
yeah.
We're all confounded. We're all talking about the same thing.
Exactly.
That's why I like to bring lots of different disciplines together and say, well, you're saying this, but it's just the same thing that I call that.
Exactly.
Ah, right, so that's what we mean, yeah.
Exactly.
It brings everything together.
Absolutely, absolutely, yes.
So, did you remember, have you covered your fifth quality?
Oh, gosh, you know, are you talking about the Panchakarma?
Yeah, so what you're saying is there's five stages of Panchakarma, and most of them involve the decrease of pressure. Are there any that involve
Svedna, we talked about it, sweating.
Oh, the Svedna, yeah, so we're sweating out the glands, we're relieving the blood.
Yes.
So it's all the, what they call the humors, or the you know, the liquid parts of our body.
Right.
And there's probably one about crying, is there not?
Well, it's not a Panchakarma process, but it does happen. Absolutely. You know, maybe during the process, you may come to some points where you're needing to emote something. Yeah. I mean, there is definitely an issue with ama is formed if, for some reason, you know, someone needs to grieve and they just block that. They don't feel like they can express in a certain way. It's got to find a place, so it'll go back into the body and kind of crystallize there. Yeah. So I would say, like, crying could be a byproduct of Panchakarma, you know.
Well, you know, if it's something that we've taken on, you know, as a trauma, sometimes it does get crystallized, and you need to, like, dissolve those crystals the salty water of tears, the universal solvent.
Absolutely, absolutely. Right, so I would say that, you know, tears, or how I was saying earlier, for me it tends to be rage. those crystallized emotions, yeah, they begin to come out. They begin to express themselves and leave the body once you go through these cleansing and rejuvenation processes. You know, anything that's held in the body, yeah, begins to come out. So, you know, the healing crisis could certainly be more emotional in nature, depending on the person, as opposed to physical. Or it could be a wonderful medley of both, which is why, you know, you need to have support when you go through this. I find it's a bit easier. Panchakarma, you know, shouldn't be done by anyone other than people who are properly trained, of course. You know, because things could go a bit wrong if you don't do it properly. So there's a big responsibility with that process.
So, yeah, and, well, let's say, what could go wrong?
You could over-oleate a person. You could have them take in too much oil. And,
oh, my God, they'll end up looking like a sausage. Botox has got nothing on these guys. These are...
And, you know, to a certain extent, a person, the patient will, their own inner wisdom will come up. They will not be able to take in any more oil. But
it's like just one after dinner mincer.
They're like, please, no more. No, they'll feel, you know, they'll start to feel overwhelming feelings of nausea and lethargy. And you can feel that to a certain extent, but over-oleation can occur where the body can no longer function in the way that it's supposed to. So ama is just totally trapped within the body, because if you can't digest oil properly, you're creating more ama. Same thing with if you go through Panchakarma and you don't do the proper rejuvenation, you know, if you're under the guidance of a practitioner, you can be left with sort of a debilitating fatigue, because your tissues have been sort of cleared, but they're not being then fed again properly. Also, your digestion, the way you metabolize food, it needs to be brought back up gently, because when you go through a cleanse, your digestion takes a rest to a certain extent, and the fires in your body, your digestive agni, is a little bit low. And so there's a way of bringing it back up gently so that you can digest food properly again. So if people, you know, go through the process incorrectly, they could end up with, you know, joint pain, further digestive problems, headaches, that kind of thing. So, Not to scare anyone.
No. Everything's fine. Hey, yeah. We're at the top of the hour. And okay. So let's, you can go and have a little cuddle. And I'm going to play, this is a song from, again, a band that I was in 23 years ago. This is called Slow to Surface. And it's all about...
I like the title.
Yeah, it's all about emotions, really. Wonderful. It's based on a four, you know, we've got this A note that's ringing. It's a 4-3-2 note. And it's ringing and it's building up and vibrating and it gets more and more and more and more intense. And so, you know, suddenly it just bursts like a submarine coming to the surface. Check it out. This is The Mystery School with Slow to Surface.
Okay. Welcome back. Welcome back to the to Sunday, August the 2nd. I didn't tell anybody the date. All right, that's enough. You can go later. Welcome back to Ever Beyond. I'm talking to the dog here, husky dog Pip, and he's now sniffing around for food. Go and lie down. Go on.
Oh, you are such a good boy. Yes, you are. You're the good boy. You are the good. There is no mystery. Who is a good boy? You're the good boy. That's it. Yeah. Yes.
Off. Anyway, let me sing to you in the language of my people.
Yes.
Here we go. Yeah. Yes. I speak to him in this language. Here's a piece of meat. Anyway. So where were we? As I was saying during the break, one of the things that your this conversation is giving me is bringing the Sanskrit language alive. Because here you are, you're using it in terms of the body, and we all know the body and the sounds of the body. And like I was saying, that the word that I use for the nung is like it could almost be an ancient word, because it's ancient for every human, because it's the word that every baby uses for food.
Mm.
Nyang, nyang, nyang. Yeah, you probably experienced this, you know, having a young child here.
Yes, exactly. Yes, right. Well, there's, you know, single syllable mantras that are used that relate to the chakras. Do you know them? Are you familiar with them?
I might be, but our audience certainly won't be in en masse, so please, I think that he says he'd like to hear that as well.
Yeah, exactly. I was just curious if you knew them, because it sounds like the work that you do, the seven ray work, seems like it could, I don't know, there's a correlation
it's,
there.
Yeah, well, you know, I do this thing, and it's all about frequency and tone and the...
Yeah.
See, he's right. And the divisions of the 12 and the 7 and the 3 and the 4 and the 1 and all that stuff. And how it all locks together and sets itself in order, you see.
Interesting.
And so when you get the order right, like if you're working from, say, the top down or the middle out. Yeah, you think so? Yeah, okay. It's like I have a co-host.
Yeah.
What are you sniffing? Can you sniff Mousy? Is it Mousy? Let's see if you can find him. Maybe I'd be happy if you ate Mousy. Yeah, a bit of dinner. Just don't leave his bones in the kitchen. Okay.
Ew.
Meanwhile.
I like it. It's like, you know, these interludes with the pup.
The tongue.
Good timing.
Please.
Well, so there are these bija mantras. Bija means seed, and each chakra has a sound, a primordial sound. So it's sound of creation, and they're one syllable, and you can chant them either, you know, using your voice, or you can chant them in your mind silently. Sometimes chanting silently will have a stronger effect because you're really focusing on this internal, you know, the internal sound, and really focusing your thought on this idea of sound. So I think it can be just as powerful, if not more so, than chanting it externally. So starting with the first chakra, the root chakra, the bija mantra, the seed mantra for that is lum. L-U-M, lollipop, umbrella, manatee. So lum.
It's the intergalactic phonetic language there. So the lum, and
yes, it's, lum.
Is there a note? Is there a musical note that's associated with that?
I wish I knew. I bet you there is, and I tried to look it up so that we could talk about it today.
Find it.
Yes, I'm sure there are.
Keep talking about it. I'll find it, and I'll see if I can find them out. Okay.
Okay, great. And then, so that's the root chakra, lum, and chanting that will help create groundedness in the body. Makes sense. And if you think of bija as seed, when you're chanting these mantras, it's like opening the seed, so sprouting the lotus flower of each chakra. The second chakra is VUM, so V-U-M, V as in Vegas, umbrella and manatee, so VUM. And you really have to enunciate the V, the VUM. So that's the second. And the water element is associated with the second chakra and the earth with the first. And then the third chakra is RAM. So you roll the R. I'm not very good at it. I'm working on that. So it's R-U-M, RAM. That's actually, I notice if I chant RAM, it's very fiery. It's, you know, it's this, your seat of will. It really initiates this kind of will to action, the sort of power, the strength. The next one is the heart, and it's YUM, Y-U-M. And I love that it's YUM, because it makes me think of a little kid when they eat something really tasty. You know, they're like, YUM, it like fills up their heart. So it's YUM. The element of air and a little bit of ether is associated with that. Think string instruments. There's also different instruments, so we could talk about that. So the string instruments are associated with the heart. Drums with rum, with the third chakra. And I can't remember for the first two. I'm sure it's like some kind of wood instrument, but I don't remember. The throat chakra is HUM, so H-U-M, and you really pronounce the H. You really take a full breath and pronounce the H part. And then for the third eye, the Ajna chakra, that Bija mantra is Om. Is Om, basically. And then finally for the crown chakra, silence. Or Kasham, I think it's Kasham, but I think it's silence is really the main Bija mantra for that. And I love that silence is included. It's considered a sound in a way, which is fascinating. So those are the Bija mantras. And there are some people, I think, that have recordings of these mantras. And Russell Paul is a person that I think has one you can get online that I've listened to that I really like that one. And you can feel the effects within your body if you want to try listening to someone else chant the mantra. So there you go.
Right. Okay. So, well, I've got, here we go.
Roots. You have your homework.
Oh, yeah.
You found.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm quick. I don't mess about. root chakra, 256 hertz, which I know is a key of the note of C in the 432 scale.
Okay, great. Right.
The thing about 432 is that some of these numbers come out exactly as whole numbers, which is like, and they're numbers that are like, ooh, 144, you know, really,
yes.
Really kind of, you know, recognized numbers that are like, oh, there's a sacred number, there's 432. Oh,
yes.
Look, there's 108. That's 432.
Oh, yes. There's 108 major marma points.
Yes.
So there you go.
Yeah. So 432, and I mean, the other thing is 43. I can't remember what it is, but it's 216 is 6 cubed. So okay. It's 4 times 6 cubed. So it's 2 cubed. It's 2 squared by. It's like it. There's a relationship between 2 and 3 that creates the whole smorgasbord of natural frequency. It's all about two and three.
Oh,
and it all comes from Pythagoras. He figured all that stuff out, and that's why A ends up as 432 and G ends up as 12, which is the number of carbon, which is the frequency of the element that we're made of. Life, Jim, was as we know it.
That's wonderful.
So, more sacral chakra, 288. Again, as I said, which is twice. In music, if you halve the frequency, that's the next octave down. So it's the same note. So C is 2 and 4 and 8 and 16 and 32. They're all Cs. They're
right.
They're all the different octaves of C. So C minus 1, 2 minus 0, you know, et cetera. Anyway. And then we have the solar plexus at 320 cycles a second. You know, nice numbers, 320. Heart chakra, 341 and 136. Throat chakra, 384. Again, 141. So there's these numbers that kind of, you know, the various patterns of numbers. There's a 41 going in there. Third eye, 448 or 221. And the crown chakra, 480 and 172. So they're very, you know, nice round numbers, if you like.
Yeah, interesting. So are they pure notes?
Those would be expressed as a pure frequency, yeah. Pure. And that would also entail a particular length. Because frequency, yeah. So say you had a flute and it was, you know, whatever the wavelength of 480 cycles is, you know, it would be that. That would be a natural flute. And you could use it for healing, like the Native Indian ones.
So is a hertz length of time, or is it, yeah, no.
It's a number of repeats per second.
Right, okay, so obviously 480 has a lot more sine waves to it than 256.
It's just the same sine wave, but tightened up twice as much.
Right.
Yeah, so...
In a length of space.
Yeah, so, right. Like, if are you familiar with a guitar?
Yeah, a little bit.
All right, well, let me just go and grab mine, and I'll describe... I'm too old for the song. Anyway, here's my guitar, and this is the A string. Okay, and that note is 108 cycles a second. But if I divide the string halfway, make it half the length, I get the same note, I get 216 cycles. Mm. That's twice the amount. And then if I halve it again, and go all the way up there, that's 432.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you just you double it, and that's the octave. So that's how music relates as octaves. Where was I going with this? So yeah, so the length of something determines its frequency.
Interesting.
Where was I taking that?
In
the relationship between these different notes that it was talking about. Yeah, you know, they're all in they're the same note in different octaves is basically what they're saying.
Interesting.
So lum will be as they say here, corresponding with a C, so there would be frequencies that would be associated with it that would also have medicines that would associate with it. And if so, so when I'm dealing with sound healing, okay, so I've been working with Shari Edwards' method for a long time, and which analyzes the voice frequency wise and determines that there is a frequency usually that is either in stress or it's deficient.
Within the body, within the individual.
Within the entire system, and it comes out in the frequencies that exist in the voice.
Yeah, that's fascinating that it would come out through the voice. I mean, it makes sense in a certain way. But I always think about, well, the nervous system is going to have a frequency that would be quite high, probably, as opposed to other parts of the body.
Yes, well, there's different octaves go into different, bands of body zones, you know, the different realms.
Mm-hmm.
So each octave, there's one that is biomagnetic, there's one biophysical, biochemical, you see. Each is a different octave.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite fascinating. It just breaks it all down and makes it all look so obvious. Oh, that's how it works. All right, okay. It's all in octaves. It's all about octaves.
Well, obvious to you because you understand music, you know?
Yeah.
I think that you have a good understanding of it. Whenever numbers come into the picture for me, my brain does this weird, it kind of like feels like it's being twisted. Like I just don't understand numbers. It's really dreadful. I have a hard time with numbers, even though I think they're really important.
Yeah. It's probably you had a bad math teacher or something.
I did.
Funny that, isn't it?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, really creepy guy. that's a whole other.
That's a whole other thing.
Yeah, it is. You're like, oh, I didn't know your shoes were going that way. But it reminds me, though, just talking about sound and the sound healer, the woman that you've done work with, in terms of diagnostics. You know how she can record the voice and then figure out where certain imbalances are.
Yes.
In Ayurveda, there is a process of using sound to also kind of discover imbalances in the body, and you actually tap the abdomen of the body in different places, and you listen for different qualities based on the five elements. Like, does this tap, when I tap, does it sound watery, or does it sound airy or earthy? And I actually, the name escapes me, the Sanskrit name for that process, but all of the senses are used, including the sense of hearing, to diagnose. And it sounds like there's similarities to the woman that you work with, that you can use, what is the body literally telling you, through its sound.
Well, it seems that the body screams. The body screams out on all frequencies, on all wave bands. I'm ill, please heal me.
Yes. So you can get it through pain.
You get it through pain.
Physical sensation, but yeah, sound.
But, it also comes through people's neuroses. You know, people scream out there in pain without saying that, you can hear it in people's voices. Some people are just very uncomfortable to listen to.
Yeah.
Because they're making you feel a feeling, which is their feeling of feeling this.
Right.
What does Ayurveda say about that? The way that people express to each other and how people pick up feelings and emotions from each other?
In terms of listening to different voices and hearing the emotions contained within them, it brings me back to the idea of qualities. Like when you're working with a patient, or if you're observing yourself, you think about these 10 pairs of opposites, these 10 qualities, and their ways of describing all of existence. So let's say someone has a really sharp voice. Really sharp voice that is kind of loud. I'm trying to think of the qualities, like sharp is a quality. So someone has a really sharp, penetrating voice, they may have a lot of heat and anger that's coming through. Not necessarily so, but if your observation of that is used in conjunction with other observations, it's a way of getting information about what's going on for that person. Or if a person has a really dry, raspy voice, if there's a lot of dryness, that quality of dryness there, that could be associated with, fatigue and grief. So that kind of emotion and state of physical vitality or lack thereof. I think you're asking something a little bit different. Is that right? Are you asking, is there an Ayurvedic, see if I can get it right. Is there an Ayurvedic perspective on how a person actually responds to another person?
Possibly.
Their voice?
that's another area, which is the natural healing qualities that we all have. Which is basically that, when Shari was describing it, she described it as something she experienced. She would hear this note in her head, and she would then sing it to people, and it would have this effect on them, and it would heal them. It would treat whatever they were dealing with. It was the remedy.
So she's receiving the note intuitively.
Yeah.
She's able to vocalize it.
Actually able to hear it, because it's an ultrasonic note.
Cool.
And it comes out of the ears.
Wow.
It's projected out from the ears. So that's why I'm, is there a perspective, are there any things that say that we make a sound?
That our body makes a sound.
Our body makes sounds all by itself, like I hear a in my head all the time, and it's I'm not a TI. This has happened.
Oh, really? I have tinnitus in my right ear.
Uh huh.
And I just think about the nervous system. We've talked about the chakras and the sounds they emit, so there's definitely a recognition.
I've got the 10 qualities here, by the way.
Oh wow, you're very fast.
Yeah. I know what questions to ask. You see,
it's ten pairs of opposites.
Ten pairs. There's light and heavy, cold and hot, dry and moist, solid or liquid, fast and slow, stable and mobile, hard and soft, clear and cloudy, smooth and rough, subtle and gross.
Yes.
From
gross, well, gross meaning dense as opposed to disgusting.
it's gross. It's gross. Grody to the max. And subtle as heck. Anyway. So these are definitely ways you can cut reality, these 10 ways. And you could probably look at that and say that, you know, these are the 10 dimensions. Maybe these are 10 qualities. We're in the last half hour. Would you like a quick break? Do you need to cuddle baby again?
She's actually going out for a little walk, so she's good.
All right,
she's with her dad. Yeah.
Okay. So, well, let's just blast through with this then, in the last half hour.
Sure.
There's these lovely 10 qualities, and so in the Connecting Consciousness pages, we've been talking about various things. And where was I going to get to? Oh, I've totally lost the point of that.
So it's in relation to the page, the group, rather.
Right. Okay. Let's go back to what you were talking about. Something that you wanted to bring back in later, and that was the we were talking about copper.
Oh, you're going to bring up copper? I thought we were going to talk about that after.
copper is a private arrangement.
No, we can certainly talk about it. No, there are different metals that are used in Ayurvedic medicine. They contain different qualities to them and different healing attributes. So copper, and this is, I think, known by a lot of people, has antibiotic qualities to it. It's like a cleansing type of metal. So I use that a lot with the Shiradhara therapy. So I have a vessel that's made out of copper. So when the oil passes through, it's also sort of like made antiseptic as well. Let's take the metal silver, for example. Silver has a cooling quality to it. So that can be used also in Shiradhara, but also in other practices like tongue scraping. You can use a silver tongue scraper for someone that has a lot of heat in their body. So it's like helping to balance by introducing the opposite quality, more of the opposite quality for healing. And then there's gold, and gold has a prabhav, which means a special action for enhancing a person's ojas, which is their essential immunity and strength. So gold is a really powerful metal to use. It's also used in color therapy. So if you want to meditate on the color, either by actually wearing gold, which I know you can only wear so much, but or meditate on the color gold, that will just help build strength and support to the physical and subtle bodies. So metals are used a lot. And I love copper because I went to art school and studied sculpture and did a little bit of metal smithing there. And long story short, I basically created my own equipment because it's really hard to find a lot of the Ayurvedic equipment in the U.S. at this point. So I started working with copper, and I made my own stand. And it's important. I think it's important to try to stick to tradition as much as you can. I mean, I think technology is wonderful, and there's certainly a place for that as well. But there seems to be an importance with actually using proper metals and that kind of thing. So for the different healing therapies. So that's sort of what I have to say, but it's also a conductor, as you know. I think you were talking about copper coils in your last show.
Yes.
Or the show before
yes.
that. Yes.
New paradigm workers, people who wind coils, it seems.
Yeah. No, that's interesting because that's based on a lot of work that Tesla was doing. So,
yeah, the word coil and Tesla are often used in the same sentence and breath almost.
Didn't he create these types of antennae that basically could pick up sounds from other dimensions.
He understood antennas, yes, more than that. I mean, I think he managed to radio through to Aldebaran or some other, maybe not Aldebaran, some other intelligence in the universe, yeah. Because he got some tech out of these guys. He really
right.
did.
Some influence, right. Yeah.
And, right. But, so, yeah, but if you have the right piece, the right length, then you can, if you know that there's an excess frequency, this is an interesting thing, actually, is that, say somebody was vibrating an intense vibration on a particular frequency.
Mm-hmm.
If you gave them a piece of a coil that was made of a piece of wire that was the length of the reciprocal frequency of that, which is like what calms it down, what cools it down, you can give someone a cure by just a piece of metal.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
I think.
But does it have to be shaped in a specific way? Like, you know, what's the understanding behind that?
Well, I mean, there's all sorts of things that the coil does. I mean, Tesla used coils that were flat instead of cylindrical. Most of the mm-hmm. time you think of a coil, you think cylindrical.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But Tesla was famous for these very wide, flat coils that are twisted in this unusual way. That basically what it does, it cancels itself out, and it resonates in a scalar dimension instead of an electrical dimension.
Oh boy!
Yeah,
that's huge.
that's when shit gets real. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. You're talking scalar, which yeah. I barely understand.
Yeah.
I barely understand that technology.
Well, I think it's basically other dimension. It's like a fourth dimensional. It's vibrating in a dimension that we don't perceive in our regular fields as yet. We don't have detection instruments for them.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that makes sense why it's used then.
Yeah. And healing, I believe, also exists on the scalar level, which is why it's not measured by electromagnetic field technology.
Well, so then how does that correlate to thought or intention, or does it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, thought and intention is scalar.
Right.
Scalar is farther than, scalar is faster than light.
Right.
You know, it's instantaneous. So
yeah. Yeah.
There's no die-off. So if you project a thought in a direction, it will not stop no matter what material is in its way.
Yeah.
And it will get there instantly. So it's not traveling there. It's existing here and there at the same time.
Right. Absolutely. And so what's fascinating to me is then, you know, with meditative practices, part of what I've learned is to observe the thoughts that are coming through, your own thoughts, not necessarily place judgment on them, just observe that they're happening, don't try to stop them. And eventually you reach a place of stillness that is without thought. So I wonder what that's all about. Because I think that when that happens, you know, sometimes if someone's working on me, you know, with healing, or if I'm working on a client, you can reach a point that in between state kind of being awake and asleep where you actually don't have a thought for a millisecond. And that's sort of, you're like, oh, that's where the healing is taking place, you know, in that kind of stillness. So, you know, I wonder how it relates to the whole idea of scalar technology and,
well,
you know, when you get beyond that.
Yeah,
you can get,
it does. Yeah. You're right. Because in the scalar technology, there's also the thing they call the zero point.
Right, okay.
So the zero point is exactly what you just spoke about. According to Frank Jordan, our resident healer, who will be in the house in about 20 minutes' time, he talks about coming into the zero point, which is the point of the void, of the creation, of the nothingness that begins everything,
mm-hmm.
the silence before the note, you know, mm-hmm. all that stuff. That's where, so there is that concept of coming back to the zero in order to recreate the universe. One of the other latest things is that the universe is not like a thing that is like switched on and it stays on. Is that it pulses in and out of existence, very much like our television monitor. And because we don't have the flicker frequency, we can't see that it's blinking out in and out of out of our existence so fast that the frequency we call it is infrared.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a gigahertz, terahertz, petahertz, you know, it's up in that high it's more than our mains frequency of 60 cycles a second or our TV flicker frequency of 70 or whatever. Anyway, meanwhile, we're looking at ways that we can find our self, our individual selves. What we've been talking about tonight, Shailene, is a lovely discourse on the cleansing and the clearing of the bodies. No, it's great. It's really good.
Yeah.
The cleansing and the clearing of the bodies in preparation for the great day of the spirit arriving. And as far as we can see, it's sometime this September.
That would be great.
That's what Simon was saying. You know, he's saying that an 8-hour period sometime in September. Okay. Thank you. That's less than a month away.
Well, that would be great to time your cleanse for just before that.
So in the last few minutes, how do people, can you just give a, like, without being dogmatic about it, you know, you've got to do this, you have to do this.
Yeah.
How do we look at it from the inside? How can we see ourselves from the inside and realize, well, you know, I clean my toilet every day, my bathroom, sorry, but I don't cleanse my aura like once every 6 months, you know?
Yeah.
Surely it's getting a bit ragged and could do with a wash.
Well, I mean, but that is a good point, you know, how our outer world reflects our inner world, so cleaning your toilet every day, that's a good start, at least, you know? It's like start with the mundane and the basic, and then maybe the more esoteric or subtle will come into place. Actually, I think there's all these daily practices that you can start implementing that are in a way mundane, you know, like tongue scraping. And I know that sounds horrific, but it really isn't. That's just one of the things you can do. And also like oiling your body every day, in the morning before you take a shower. These self-care practices, like caring for your body as a temple, can really help you to then maybe turn more towards your spiritual side. And you get to know yourself. Like if you can kind of like begin to witness yourself and think, okay, well, everyone has these 20 qualities within them. And these 20 qualities are then, they then coalesce into 5 elements. And we have different proportions of these elements within us, ether, air, fire, water, earth. And so the different quantities within each individual of these elements that makes up who we are as a person and makes us very unique. But there are certain tendencies that each of these elements carry with them, physically and emotionally and mentally, actually. And so when we can start observing these tendencies within us, eventually you can remove judgment. Like, oh, I have a tendency towards being fearful. I see that's kind of the first place I go to when I react to something. When you can start watching, you know, just being observant of this quality or being observant in the qualities of the people near you, particularly like spouses or something like that, rather than reacting to them, you form a better understanding. And
You tell them like it is.
Yeah, you tell them like it is, but you're not as
authentic. Yeah, without being angry.
Yeah. And it's not like you want to remove your emotion, because it's part of why we're here. We're supposed to emote and feel things and experience everything. But it kind of takes the edge off. You know, for me, like if I witness someone who can't make a decision, I'm actually very decisive. That's an easy thing for me. When I'm witnessing someone who's kind of really up in the clouds, airy, can't decide, and has a lot of anxiety about a decision, rather than me getting more fiery about it, more annoyed, I'm like, oh, they just have a lot of air and ether in within themselves, and that's fine. You know, it makes it a lot easier and gentler. It brings a love in more than judgment.
And that's, we really need a lot of that around these days, more and more.
It's helped me to remove a lot of my notions, my preconceived notions about who people are, you know? I mean, we're more than our tendencies, but it is our starting point as well. And just makes it a little easier to embrace that. I think I kind of went off the rails with what you were asking, but...
Well, you know, really, how can we... What is a very... Okay, so we've got these different bodies, these different levels. What do you call them? Carpus? No, not that. No, it's the different what I call the astral body, the physical bodies, the different.
Oh, koshas.
Koshas. Yes, that's funny because kosher means something different in my tradition.
Oh, is it like the opposite or something?
Well, no, kosher means good to eat.
Oh yeah. Well, it's K-O-S-H-A.
Yeah, almost. Anyway, anyway. So whatever.
Good to take in.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and also in where I grew up in Bethnal Green in London, kosher means good. You know,
that's kosher.
It has integrity.
You know? Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So anyway, so the different koshers are the different bodies, and there are bodies that are going to come under stress in the next few weeks, more than any. And what people need to know is how they can help to release that stress in a safe, harmless way if they've never done any spiritual practice ever before. No, just kidding. The people, you know, everybody's listening to this has got an interest in this kind of thing. So please, in the last few minutes, help people.
Yeah.
Please.
I mean, keeping it simple is great. So, especially if this audience is already spiritually minded and has spiritual practices in place, returning to nature in any way possible is wonderful by simply going out in the morning and being outside, so that you're connected to the bigger picture, as opposed to what's kind of rumbling around in your own mind and body. So I would say connecting to nature, that helps us to connect to our true natures as spirit. There are simple breath work practices that you can do. Just sitting and actually focusing on the breath. You don't even have to try to change it. You can just start witnessing what your breath is like, what your breathing is like. Is it fast? Is it slow? Is there a tightness in a certain part of my body? And you just sit with that for a little while. I think once you bring awareness to how you breathe, you're naturally then going to begin to relax in the places that you're feeling that tightness or that holding. So just going back and paying attention to your breath, and not even necessarily trying to change it. That could be enough. That might be enough. So taking pause is also a good practice. It could be taking pause from your thoughts, what you're thinking about, taking pause from an old argument that you have over and over again, either with yourself or another person. Keeping it simple, you know, simple practices can help. There's a lot of confusion happening right now in the world, and sometimes we need to go back to basics. Go outside.
Go outside, take your shoes off, stand on the ground.
Yeah, exactly. Basic.
You know, did you know about this Russian, these Russian technologies? They can check all these bodies. You know, they've actually got combined the technology with all of the teachings of the Sanskrit. And they have these Ayurvedic, well, not Ayurvedic, but all these different testers. And they can check your subtle bodies and things like that. And they give everybody their testers, and they send their athletes, and it's no joke, you know, they send their athletes and their soldiers and, you know, people to go to these places. And one of the things,
But what this is what makes me laugh is like they get their machine and they you know, stand their machine and they, oh, you have this and this body there, da, 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 da. Oh, that sounds terrible. What do I do about it? Oh yeah, go and stand on the ground for 20 minutes outside.
Right. Exactly. Back to basics.
Back to basics.
So are they very accurate? Do you know?
Well, I mean, they don't mess about if they're going to give them to their sportsmen. You know, they're very precious people. And so they're not going to send them to quacks. They're going to send them to the top. They're going to send them to the best. They're going to get them every level, you know?
Well, that's fascinating because there's someone, I don't know who the designer is. There's someone who's invented a way to read the pulse, the levels of pulse in Ayurveda. I know we're almost done, so I'll be quick. But you're supposed to read, that's a diagnostic tool. You read the pulse of a person, and it's seven depths, and it's 3 points of the pulse. So there's quite a few pulses happening there.
Oh, wow, seven. I'm aware of the three of the Chinese. There's three depths. So you've got seven subtle. That's very subtle.
Seven depths, and then some of the depths have more than one understanding, if that makes sense. So one depth, you can read the chakras, but you also can read the mind, if that makes sense. That's all. That's on the same level.
I'd call that an 8-bit binary, a 3-bit binary code, an octal word. But anyway, do go on.
I'm going to take your word for it. But there's someone who's invented a machine that can read the pulses, and I think it's fine. I think it's okay, because at first I was like, what? That's blasphemy. But it's fine. It's technology. You can use it. The only concern I have is that I just don't want people to become dependent on these technologies, because our bodies sometimes are enough. So it's like trying to find a balance. So maybe this type of technology that can read the pulse can be used while students are learning, and that they have something to compare it to. But I just don't want to rely fully on technology. Like, everything has its place, but it just, testing out these athletes and stuff, it's like we don't rely too heavily on what those tests say.
People used to say that about the slide rule. I'm sorry. I
totally understand. Yeah. I could just be a Luddite, and it sort of raised my hackles. I'm like, well, what about the simple act of touching someone's pulse and your heart, the consciousness of your heart reading the consciousness of theirs? I mean, there's something really important that would get lost if it was just the machine.
Well, that's another that's the another aspect of that. And that's more in healing than the idea of medicine.
Yeah, but medicine is
technical. Yeah, so tie it all back together.
Wow.
You have 4 minutes. no pressure. No, it's all about pressure. It's all right. Pressure, isn't it?
3 minutes and 30 seconds. Go. I just hope that more people learn about whatever rings true for them in terms of healing and whatever their own inner wisdom guides them to. Like I said, Ayurveda has been just a wonderful friend for me. And I hope more people will learn about it. That's part of the challenge, you know, when you pick up a healing practice that isn't well known, you know, in your culture. You have to let people know what it is first. But like you said, it can be translated. There's many, many different ways to express the same thing. So I think Ayurveda is just one way that kind of speaks of a certain truth. So, but it's been really great to be able to speak with you on your show. And maybe we'll get to do it again sometime. It'd be nice.
Sure, it's great fun.
It'd be fascinating to have some callers come in.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Is like maybe next time we can have some. You can take calls on. Perhaps people might talk about some of the. I don't want to make it sound like an agony aunt or anything like that. But you may have like. I don't want people to start talking about their ailments and their, you know.
Oh,
their
complaints. I see. Yeah.
But I would like to have an intelligent discussion amongst healers, people who work with this stuff all the time and bring together that kind of show.
Yes, like if someone would call in and say, well, my understanding of the emotional body is this. How does that relate to your practice and vice versa? Yeah,
exactly. So so next time you're on, let's do some of that. And we'll talk about that. At the
Okay. I'll only be on if the pup is back.
Oh, it's probably going to be next year. That's a, yeah. Anyway. Well, we'll see. Thank you so much. Chelin Trelo. I can't help it. It's just, Trelo. That's my, yeah. Anyway, from Jeremy Perron, this has been Ever Beyond. Beyond. Thank you very much. Stay tuned for Frank Jordan and the Earth Healers Group. We're bound to be talking about the same sort of stuff. There's a really strong zeitgeist going on right now. Thank you very much, Chelin. Good night.
Thank you.
Thanks for going Beyond.